One-time prodigy Joshua Bell recently took the helm of the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields, the famed chamber orchestra led for so many years by Sir Neville Mariner. On his first tour as its music director and conductor, Bell conducts from the concertmaster's chair and signals the other players with gestures and his violin bow. We'd like to hear from musicians today about what makes a good conductor or a bad one. Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation at our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Of course, Joshua Bell continues to perform and just released a new CD with longtime collaborator Jeremy Denk called French Impressions. An excerpt from Maurice Ravel's Sonata for Violin and Piano from the new CD, French Impressions. Joshua Bell joins us from our bureau in New York, and thanks very much for coming in today.
Oh, thank you. Nice to be here.
And I wondered whether the communication that you develop with a partner in a duet can translate to what you need to do as a player-conductor in a much larger setting.
Well, there's a lot in common, really. The way you communicate with a pianist, let's say on this album, through gestures and also in the rehearsal, of course, the discussions that go on in rehearsal, discussing the concepts of the piece that you're performing. It's similar when I get in front of the orchestra now with the Academy and discuss how my version and my concept of the Beethoven Seventh Symphony, for instance, and then when I conduct this orchestra, I do lead from the concertmaster chair, which is something a little different for some people who haven't seen it done that way. But it really does work very well, and this orchestra really knows how to read those sort of cues. They're very good at that.
It's sort of a player manager in baseball. Been a while since we've
a little bit, yeah.
You've worked under so many batons now. I wondered what you think makes a good conductor. And, for example, you worked under Sir Neville Mariner.
I did. Actually, the first recording I ever made, first concerto recording I did, was with Sir Neville Mariner. I don't know if he was a sir at that point yet, but it was with Neville Mariner at that time, with the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields. That was 25 years ago, and so I've kind of gone full circle here. And he's a wonderful conductor, and he started actually leading that orchestra from the violin as well. So this orchestra, their roots came from being directed from the chair, not from with a stick. But naturally, I have worked with, I think, probably thousands of conductors by now, and I've learned a lot from the bad ones as well as the good ones.
Without naming names...
I'll just say the bad ones then. Okay, yeah. No, I'm just kidding.
Without naming names, what makes a bad conductor?
Well...
Or a conductor who's having a bad day.
No, well, I mean... there's so many things that make, let's say, a good conductor, a bad conductor, someone who can actually get in the way of the music. I mean, the great secret is that an orchestra can actually play without a conductor at all. Of course, a great conductor will have a concept and will help them play together and unify them. But there are conductors that actually inhibit the players from playing with each other properly, and of course, there's interpretive things. There are conductors that I cringe, you know, when I see the way they don't follow the score. They don't. They're giving cues that are contrary to what's intuitive for a musician who's trying to follow them. There's so many things that make that mm-hmm. one can do wrong. I'm still learning myself, you know, what works, what can help create the excitement, and where I should just not give a cue and just let them play. And then when you do that, when you're not beating every single beat and showing every single thing that you have on your mind, when you don't do that, then when you do show something, it makes so much more of an impact. So I'm still learning all those things myself.
Can you hear taking a familiar orchestra and saying, "Oh, well, that's clearly Tilson Thomas at the helm there"? I mean, can you hear the difference of that signature of different conductors?
Well, sometimes certainly can. I mean, certainly some of the older, you know, when you listen to Herbert von Karajan or Bernstein, I can often guess who is the conductor just based on their tempi and the way the rubato, where they take time and one can do that. I can't always tell, but it's certainly, I mean, a good conductor makes a real difference. And I was talking to Alan Gilbert, one of my favorite conductors, a conductor of the New York Philharmonic. He actually came to our show in London with the Academy, and he was sitting in the second row. It was kind of intimidating. sort of my debut as music director. But afterwards, he was telling me, I heard you say in an interview that you like playing concertos without conductor, that you much prefer it. And he said, he was really pissed off at me, but he wasn't really. We're good friends. I also enjoy playing like the Beethoven concerto on this tour with the Academy that we're in the middle of right now, you know, playing the Beethoven concerto without a conductor, where I'm playing the solo and then directing the tutti's, and somehow it makes the players this way. They have to sit on the edge of their seat. They can't get away with kind of sitting back and following. They have to lead themselves as well. And also, there's sort of no middleman this way. They follow directly what I'm doing, and somehow it feels even more natural.
There's no moment when you want to jump up and leave your role as the violinist just to make sure you get that section coming in at the right moment?
It's sometimes frustrating when I'm doing one thing and the orchestra has to do something very, you know, interrupt something very contrary that I can't cue and have the atmosphere that I want from my part. And so I have to we have to plan that in advance and say, really, you lead it and you just interrupt me there. And a lot of that has to be decided ahead of time. But what I think what a conductor does, really, I'd say 90% of what a conductor does, their job is done in the rehearsal. On stage, that's that last bit of inspiration and in the moment is, of course, very important. But what you do in the rehearsal, how you lay out your interpretation and how you rehearse the orchestra is really that's the most. Once you've done that job, you should be able to almost let them play on their own.
We're talking with Joshua Bell, music director and conductor of the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields, the famous chamber orchestra. We're also talking to him about his new CD, French Impressions. We want to hear from musicians today about the role of the conductor, what makes a good one or a bad one. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And let's start with Clayton. Clayton with us on the line from Phoenix.
Hi. I would like to say that when a conductor walks in, being a musician, there's a certain air of when a great conductor walks in, everybody goes silent and they listen to what they have to say. And I've been in so many rehearsals with conductors who let attention fly and not be centered on what's really happening. So that's what I feel like a great conductor can really do to a group.
I agree with that. It's kind of a little bit of chicken and the egg there. You have to earn their respect first to get them to listen to you as well. And to do that, you have to be a good conductor. But it's a little bit like, sometimes it's, it might sound silly, but it's almost like a teacher in a classroom. You know, you have to be a psychologist as well, know how to get people's attention. You have to juggle being a friend with them and being and you have to joke, you have to be able to have fun, and yet you have to lay down the law to a certain extent and earn their respect in that way. So it's always a balancing act. You can't be too chummy at all the time, but then you don't want to be a mean person, and because then they don't want to play for you either. So
Clayton, thanks very much for the call. You played, as you mentioned previously, as a visitor with the St. Martin in the Fields, Academy of St. Martin in the Fields. But it's one thing to be brought in as the violinist. You're expected to play the part. You're the virtuoso. You're the music director here, and you're picking the music. And is there any backbiting? Well, of course he picked the violin concerto.
Well, certainly when I tour with, I always do something that I can play a solo, usually a violin concerto, and I don't conduct every concert of theirs, so they have plenty of chance during the season to play with pianists and play orchestral programs. So they expect me to play. They don't want me to play the piano, that's fine. I've actually been touring with them for the last 10 years on occasion as a guest, and I've gotten to know them very well, and somehow the chemistry. A lot of it is chemistry, by the way. Mm-hmm. I've worked with great conductors. You know, I'll play in Houston and play with a conductor, and they love him, and it goes great. And then I'll go to the next city and Philadelphia and I say, I just worked with this great conductor. The orchestra loved him. And they'll say, oh, my God, we hated him. We, you know, from the second he walked on the podium, it was just there was no chemistry at all. And so so somehow I feel this orchestra and I, we had a, at least I thought we had a good chemistry. And then they did ask me to be their music director, so that I guess that they felt the same way.
Must have felt the same. I was surprised when I was first in London to see St. Martin in the Fields, and it's a relatively small little church tucked away in a major city square. Do you guys play a lot of home games?
Well, you know, the funny thing about this orchestra, they've made probably at least 1,000 recordings, maybe more than any other orchestra at all. I mean, they're very famous for the recordings around the world. They've got a very big name. They don't play a lot in London, and that's something I want to change now. I want to play more home games. They do tour just so much, and the St. Martin the Fields itself is a small place, and it's not conducive to big symphonic things, but it's nice for some smaller chamber things, which they continue to do.
We're talking with Joshua Bell. Again, his new CD with longtime collaborator Jeremy Denk is called French Impressions. He's also the new conductor and musical director of the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's talk with Alan. Alan with us from Ferndale in Michigan.
Hi. I just want to say, first of all, I was at your concert on Sunday at Hill Auditorium in Ann Arbor, and it was absolutely breathtaking. So thank you for that performance, Mr. Bell.
Thank you so much. It was great. I love Ann Arbor, and I love that auditorium is one of the most amazing places to play. And we all really had a blast that night.
Yeah, absolutely. But anyway, I'm a public school music teacher, a band director, and as a conductor, I notice a lot of people in my profession, you know, just rely on the rehearsal only to get the musical things that they want from their ensemble. You know, how do I get my students to visually communicate with me? It's something I struggle with on a daily basis, so that we can make music without verbal cues and more rely on my gesture as opposed to stopping and rehearsing. You know, it's something we have a lot more rehearsal time, so it's possible in public education rather in the professional world. But how do I get my visual cues to help my students understand the music better?
Well, you know, really the whole thing is it's a kind of code, isn't it? I mean, what those gestures, they're sort of abstract, but it is a code, and so it's training. In the rehearsal, once you train them to say, you know, when I do this, this is how. First of all, these cues should be sort of also logical and instinctive. They should be able to pick that up. It's when we were talking about bad conductors, that's something that I've noticed as a soloist over the years. So many times I've seen conductors that every time they have a thought, they stop the orchestra and say it, and I can see the orchestra rolling their eyes. It's like, oh God, he stopped again. There's a technique to rehearsing. You know, you try to store up the things you want to say. You try to remember what they are so you can say them all at once at the end. And also not to have to, like you're saying, you shouldn't have to speak everything. You should be able to show with your hands. You know, if you want something to become more legato, there's nothing more frustrating is seeing a conductor say play softer as they're waving their hands, huge gestures, you know, and they say, now softer here, you know, it has to correlate to what they're doing. And there's so much you can show with your hands, and that you're right, that's what we should strive for, not having to say so much and showing it through the hands. And
yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you very much.
Good luck, Alan.
Thank you.
Let's see if we get Michael in. Michael calling us from Broadbrook in Connecticut.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
I spent about 6 years in the Army band, so we ended up seeing everything, you know, from guys that were just learning to very, very experienced bandmasters. And one of the best guys we had was this guy named Charles Moore down in Fort Hood, Texas. And he was a real quiet guy, but he was amazingly intense and amazingly knowledgeable. And he conducted in the smallest patterns of any conductor that I ever worked for. And I continue to play professionally now. And his patterns were so small, and the difference between a fortissimo and a pianissimo was really not that much, but everybody understood. It seemed like he had a line in the air to everybody in the band. And he ended up leaving, and we got another bandmaster who was very good, but just never quite seemed to have the communication. And it didn't come from gestures. It, you know, he, of course, he ran a beautiful rehearsal. He had a great concept for everything mm-hmm. that we played. And, I mean, it's just wonderful. But just one more funny thing about it.
Quickly, if you could.
I'm a memorizer. And I memorize long passages of music. And so when the conductor is conducting, I tend to really, really watch the conductor and not look at the music. Mm-hmm. And I had a conductor a few years back came after a rehearsal. He came and he said, "Would you do me a favor, Mike?" And I said, "What?" And he goes, "Would you stop staring at me?"
You can't win. You can't really. You
can't win. No.
First, they're not paying attention. Then they're staring.
Good job. I love your work.
Thanks very much for the call.
Thanks. It's funny about the gestures, you know, that there are some conductors, and you see some 95-year-old conductors. That's one of the reasons why I want to get into conducting more, is because I think you live longer. So you see a 95-year-old conductor who doesn't have the flexibility and the strength to move around a lot, and yet they can show with a small gesture a kind of power that an orchestra can feel, and they can get this amazing sound out of an orchestra without huge gestures. And so it's an amazing thing what the conductor's role. It's something sort of magical about it. When it works, it's something really amazing.
Well, Joshua Bell, thank you very much for your time today. We appreciate it, and good luck with the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields.
Thanks so much for having me.
And we'll end where we started with some of Maurice Ravel's Sonata for Violin and Piano from the new CD by Joshua Bell and Jeremy Dank called French Impressions. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.